Welcome back to Rittner Reflections. This is Jeff Rittner, and you are listening to episode 34. Today is August 29th, and we are less than 2 weeks from the start of the 2026 NFL season. Preseason games are complete, training camps are being shut down, and every team is making those difficult and final roster decisions. Then the marathon begins. Like last year, I am dedicating an episode to the topic of NFL football, and I'm calling this one a Valentine Dream, lifting the Lombardi at SoFi. Last year, I recorded episode 14 in August and episode 24 in February, outlining the road from training camp at Levi's to Super Bowl 60 played at Levi's Stadium, and the amazing experience of attending it with my daughter back in February. It's hard to believe that 6 months have flown by. And here we are now at the cusp of another epic march towards Super Bowl 61. This time to be played on February 14th at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. It's a Valentine's final. And every franchise enters September believing they can be the one standing on that stage and lifting the Lombardi Trophy. To get you in the mood and ready to go, I'm going to start with a season primer. 10 things every football fan should know heading into 2026. And after this, I'll take you back to training camp at Levi's Stadium, where I attended a San Francisco 49ers and Tennessee Titans joint practice session. This is followed by the bulk of the episode, which is an authentic, warm, and fun-filled conversation with two very close friends, Robin and Scott. You will be amazed by some of the unexpected coincidences, powerful stories and memories, and candid thoughts about the upcoming season from three diehard 49er faithful. So let's get started. Here is my Rittner reflection. 10 things every fan should know heading into the 2026 NFL season. Let's count down, starting at number 10. The Super Bowl 61 will be played on February 14th, 2027, Valentine's Day. This will be the first Super Bowl ever held on Valentine's Day, and it's on President's Day weekend, which is a real bonus. I know the NFL has wanted this, and so have fans, to have the day after the Super Bowl to be a holiday. And because of timing, it works out perfect. Monday will be a holiday. Number 9, the game will be played at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. You know, Southern California has hosted 9 Super Bowls, the third most of any market. You know, the first two in the early days were at the LA Coliseum, one of those games I attended as a young boy. 5 Super Bowls were held at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, and 2 at SoFi, and this year, number 3. Number 8, only 2 teams have won the Super Bowl in their home stadium. Does anyone out there know who those 2 teams are? Well, I'll tell you. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers won Super Bowl 55, and the following year, the Rams won Super Bowl 56 at SoFi. And this year's Lombardi will again be awarded at SoFi. And so the question is, will it be the Rams again? Number 7, the 2026 NFL season opens on Wednesday, September 2nd. Only twice has the NFL opened the season on a Wednesday. The first was in 2012, when the league moved the opener from traditional Thursday to Wednesday, specifically to avoid President Obama's convention speech. The second is this year, and this time it's because of the Australia game. There will be a game in Australia, which is a day in advance And so they scheduled it on Wednesday. And this is not for politics. And yet, funnily enough, the Wednesday opener does overlap with President Trump's convention speech. Maybe he wanted the NFL to move the date too. Who knows? Either way, the league didn't budge. Number six, the season opener features Seattle and New England. This will be the first time the league has started a season with a rematch of the previous Super Bowl. These two teams played each other less than 7 months prior at Levi's Stadium, which I chronicled in episode 24. Number five, the NFL will play meaningful games on four continents this season: North America, Europe, Australia, and Latin America. Truly a global footprint that we've never seen before. And it fits perfectly with the path that the NFL has been on for quite a while. You know, now there's even talk of having teams located in an international location. So I wonder who will be the first. Number four, Australia will host its first ever NFL regular season game. Now, this is a true milestone. It's not a preseason game or exhibition. This is a meaningful game. It's going to feature two division rivals, the Los Angeles Rams and the San Francisco 49ers, on the opening week. Now, the interesting thing is, in order to get to Australia from the West Coast, where both these teams are, it's a 15-hour flight. And there's a lot of discussion and strategy going into this. So, for example, the San Francisco 49ers have decided to go to Australia on that 15-hour flight a week in advance to get acclimated and be ready for the game. On the other hand, the Los Angeles Rams are taking a different approach. They will fly out the day before, arriving the day before in Australia to play the game. Now, what's interesting is that whoever wins this game is going to spark all sorts of theories and ideas about what is best. Do you go early or do you go right before the game? It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Number three, the 49ers are one of the few teams having to play internationally twice. The one in Australia that I just spoke of, and then they have to go back in November to Mexico City. And when you look at their entire season and the different trips they need to take, they will have traveled 38,000 miles during the season, which is the most of any team. Number two, 10 teams enter the season with brand new head coaches. Now, this major turnover, I think, will shape the competitive landscape. If you assume that these 10 teams are really in a rebuilding phase and that none of them will make it to the Super Bowl, then the list narrows to 22 teams. Now, finally, here's number one. From these 22 teams, only two will be at SoFi on Valentine's Day: the Denver Broncos and the San Francisco 49ers. There you have it. That's the landscape, the dates, the history, the travel, the coaching changes, and the global footprint that will shape the 2026 season. With that context in place, I want to take you back to where the season really begins: training camp. Just like I did last year in episode 14, I made the annual trek back to Levi's Stadium to capture the excitement of the upcoming season. Once again, I attended one of the practices with my good friend Abhay, and this time was also joined with another good friend, Carol Tate. After the practice, we took a few minutes to record a live clip of our reaction and excitement of starting the season in this way. Take a listen. Okay, welcome. We are here once again at Levi's Stadium for our annual pilgrimage to the 49er training camp. I am joined today with two really, really good friends, Abe Gadkari, who was here last year, if you recall, and Carol Tate. Welcome, guys. We just witnessed a joint practice between the 49ers and the Tennessee Titans, and I would say it was pretty intense. In fact, the first few plays of the scrimmage, we had fights. It was quite interesting. But anyway, I thought maybe I would just ask my friends here what they thought. Abe, yeah, what do you think? Same old, or what do you think?
No, I thought it was a good practice. Some of the rookies, I thought, played really well. Stribling, amazing. And then, you know, unfortunately, we couldn't see McCaffrey. I was here to see McCaffrey, and hopefully he's doing well. But I would say overall, the practice was great.
Great. And Carol, have you been to a practice before?
You know what? This is the first time I've been to a practice. So it was great to see all the energy, particularly before the first preseason game. So great to be here. Great to see folks.
And the fight.
Yeah, yes. That was
I'm being gentle about the energy, but absolutely. There were several fights, which certainly got us excited.
Yeah. What was your favorite part? Was it the shopping?
You know what? I know they teased us about the shopping, but you know, when you're here, you get into the fandom, you got to buy something, right?
Yes, so of course.
We got our hats and we're excited.
Yeah, great. And
unfortunately, Carol couldn't get her hat signed because the players are taking too long to come out.
Yes.
Not like last year.
Yeah.
Last year, they came out pretty quickly.
So speaking of last year, Abe, if you recall, at the end of my recording, I asked you a very important question. I asked you, okay, 2026 season. Last year, the Super Bowl was here at Levi's, but this coming year, it's going to be at SoFi in Los Angeles. So I want to know from you, which two teams are going to be there and which one's going to hold the trophy?
You know, I would love to say the 49ers. I think they have a chance, but I think it's their division rivals. LA will make it to the Super Bowl and probably host and lift the trophy in their own stadium. From the AFC, I would say...
But he's the nicest person. He is such a nice person.
I think Mahomes might make it back. I think I'd go Kansas City.
Okay, you're a Kansas City guy. You picked them last year.
I did.
That's right. Yes. Okay, great. Carol... coming your way now. You're a Bears fan Bengals.
Yeah, Cincinnati Bengals. But you know, we've had lots of injuries, right? Cincinnati's team, particularly, you know, our quarterback. So that's going to be tough. We'll see how that goes. But I am all the way Chicago Bears and probably LA.
Oh, but they're in the same. That's the
same division. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
So
AFC. We can. So who do you say?
For
AFC.
AFC.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're not going to go with your Cincinnati?
I don't know. I don't think so. Because I don't think we have enough players around our quarterback.
Okay.
I just don't think so.
Okay.
Would love to, but.
Yeah. Okay. Well, for me, I'm going to be the eternal optimist. And I'm going to say the 49ers will hold the trophy at number 6 at SoFi. And they will beat the Houston Texans. That's my pick.
That's a good choice.
Okay, I'm usually every year wrong, so just take that in mind. Okay. But we'll see. Well, anyway, I'm glad you guys came. You know, it's a beautiful day out here in Northern California, and we got to see some great football, some good action. And the first preseason game is going to be on Thursday against these two teams, Tennessee and San Francisco.
Exactly.
So it should be a lot of fun. Thanks a lot. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We'll see. Training camp always gives you that first real sense of the season, the speed, the youth, the optimism. I think Carol and Abe captured it perfectly. Now let's bring in two people who've lived this team for decades and who are ready to discuss the past, the present, and the future of our favorite team. Before we dive into the season, I want listeners to know who's sitting with me here today. First, I have Robin. She and I go back more than 35 years at Intel. Through reorganizations, product launches, leadership changes, and everything in between. She's retired now, but she spent her career leading teams, solving hard problems, and navigating complexity at a level only Intel can produce. And through all of it, she's been a passionate 49ers fan. And Scott, he and I met through running a few years ago. We're a similar age, and we grew up just a few miles apart and somehow never crossed paths until recently. Scott retired just a few months ago after a long career in finance, and now he finally gets to enjoy football without checking work email. He's been a Niner fan since childhood as well. So Robin and Scott, welcome to Rittner Reflections, episode 34. I'm really, really happy that you are joining me here today to talk some football. So to start with, why don't each of you say a few words about yourselves, your careers, and what life looks like now in retirement? And then we'll kind of jump into the season. So why don't we start with you, Robin?
Okay, thanks, Jeff. So I started at Intel in 1988, not a lot of big technology at that time. I think a couple years after I joined, I met Jeff because I was working on a project in another country, and he was my exporter extraordinaire, I should say. I think you were new to Intel too. It was super, and I think we knew each other were 49er fans from the beginning. So my late husband was a very big 49er fan. And, you know, as soon as we got together, we both started being 49er fans. I retired in 2021, and I am busier now than ever. You know, you guys probably know, how do you ever have time to work with everything you have to do personally? But I cross the country every 6 months, 6 months in California, 6 months in Indiana. And we are traveling and just living life. It's great. My new husband is a Colts fan, but he's also a 49er fan. He asked me to marry him at a Colts 49er game at Levi's.
My.
And that was great. I think the 49ers won. I'm not sure, but he had a Colts shirt and a 49er hat, and it was pretty special.
Wow! Did you get your name on the board?
No, he didn't.
No. Oh, okay.
But it's okay. He had one of the police officers who stand behind us videotape it, record it on his phone. So that was pretty cool.
Wow.
But yeah, I've always been a 49er fan, always been a football fan, and you know, even with Bob gone now, Gary's just stepped right in, and we're having loads of fun with that.
That's fantastic,
yeah.
Robin. I have such fond memories of working at Intel with you. You were one of the first, outside of my group, one of the first customers, I guess you'd say, that are partners that I engaged with. And you were always so helpful and so patient with me as I was learning the ropes, especially the Intel ropes. And one of the memories I take, Robin, is you and I one time got on a plane. I believe it was a red eye. So we could go watch a football game. We had a trip to New York on business, and to go watch a football game, I think in Newark. And we got there in the morning, and it was one of those days in New York where it rained from sun up to sundown nonstop. And you and I sat like wet rats at the Newark Stadium watching what was probably one of the most exciting games I'd ever seen. The final score, I think, was like 6-3 or something.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know if you remember that, but that's
yes, I do.
Always,
absolutely,
always in my mind. Yeah, yeah. And one more just story, Robin, because you kind of triggered this in my mind. You know, you talk about, you know, your engagement there at Levi's with the Colts and the 49ers. Well, let me tell you my special story of the Colts and the 49ers. I grew up as a Colts fan.
Oh, no.
And I always, it was the Baltimore Colts. And I was just the Johnny Unitas. It was just everything. I had Colts jerseys, you name it. And I always wonder, why was I a Colts fan? And so talking to my dad, I realized what happened. What happened was the day I was born, December 5th, the 49ers were hosting the Baltimore Colts at the time at Kezar Stadium. And my dad couldn't go because my mom was in the hospital. So he was at the hospital with one of those old transistor radios with his little earplug on the side and he's listening to the game. And he always says, now whether this is true, I don't know, but he always told the story that the moment I was born, Johnny Unitas threw a touchdown pass. Yeah. So it was somehow, I think that may have contributed to me becoming a Colts fan. I'm not sure. But as I got older through high school, you know, my dad, who had season tickets, he gave them to me. And so everything kind of shifted at that point. And then the Colts moved from Baltimore to Baltimore. They moved to Indianapolis and somebody went to Baltimore from Cleveland. Oh, there's a whole story there. But so anyway, I kind of lost the interest there. But anyway, you just triggered that story. I'd forgotten about about my Colts. So anyway, thank you for that intro. And I'm going to turn over to you, Scott. What do you say?
Oh, thanks, Jeff. I mean, we met a few years ago, which was great. Just riding across paths. Someone introduced us and next thing you know, we're running together in groups and shared a lot of interest and discovered a lot about each other. I mean, growing up in Cupertino, you going to a high school that was a competitor of Cupertino High School, so that was pretty cool. I think we're only a year apart, so that's real interesting. And seeing how Cupertino's changed over the years is quite remarkable. But I've grown up in the Cupertino area, San Jose area for my life, and I've worked for startups, public companies, nonprofit, and higher ed, and most recently, the last 9 years at San Jose State, and I just retired July 1st, so that was pretty cool. I've enjoyed going to several Niner games with you, Jeff, and now we've decided to also get some Shark tickets this year, so going full spectrum on the sports, but it's nice because I'm retired now and have more time, and it's funny that Robin brought up, you know, getting engaged at the ballpark, whatever, and I was thinking, I grew up going to Candlestick my whole life. I've been a Giants fan forever and obviously a Niner fan. And they used to have instant vacation night for the Giants games. And I brought my wife. We used to go there every year and you'd have to go get a ticket and go out in center field. And before the game, they'd pick six different couples and you'd get in a limo and on the warning track and you would take off for the airport. And of course, every year we did it for like 3 or 4 years and got our little raffle ticket, went out in center field. Well, while the players are warming up and running by you with all these people, you have to have luggage or they wouldn't let you go out there. So it was kind of awkward, but didn't get our number picked, but I actually got on a knee and proposed my wife out in center field at Candlestick. So that was pretty cool. So back then we didn't have cell phones, so I didn't really see much of her because she was on payphones calling people telling that she's engaged. But so that was pretty cool. And then also Candlestick, obviously, I was there also for walking in the World Series when they had the earthquake. I'll never forget that as long as I live with all the car alarms going off and seeing the rolling cars just going up and down through the parking lot coming in a wave towards me. So that was quite interesting. And of course, we went in the ballpark because you just didn't know if they're going to play the game or not. And then you start to see some of the devastation on my little Sony Walkman, black and white. So. But I've enjoyed a lot of games at Candlestick, too. Obviously, a lot of Niner games. Cupertino marching band. I actually marched there halftime as part of the marching band. So that was pretty cool. That might have been my first game. I think it was the Saints, and that was probably 1978. And they were, I think, 2-14, the Niners. So it was a rough year. But really enjoyed it. And, of course, we've gone to some great games, too, Jeff, just most recently, the Lions and Niner championship game.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you, Scott. I recall that game vividly. Our friends in front of us who were from Detroit were not happy at the end. But you know, I'm just find it fascinating that I've asked the two of you to join me, and both of you have engagement stories at the field. It's incredible. I mean, that's amazing, that connection there. So
32 years now. So yeah,
that's amazing. So let's spend a little time with history. You guys have both brought up some historical facts, some things that you've lived and done. But what I'm really interested in is, and I think Scott, you might have just mentioned it. I was going to ask, you know, your first NFL game, and I think you just said the first NFL was the Saints in Candlestick in 78. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, when you said that, again, kind of jolt there. I was like, I was at that game. And they used to have AstroTurf. right? And it, not grass. And so, and the wind would howl, right? And it would swirl. Yep. And the game was terrible. It was it was cloudy. It was wind was blowing. It was terrible. And we were so bored. I was with my high school buddy. We were so bored. And we were like, you know, we're 18, 19 years old. We're so bored. And the fans were kind of feeling the same. And then the wind would kick up. And there was, they used to sell hot dogs in a little box. And people would, you know, the trash would get swirled around with the wind. And there was a box on the field. And the wind would blow and the box would go 10 yards. And then it would blow again. It would go another 5 yards. And people started to catch on to that. And then pretty soon everybody was cheering for the box. to get to the goal. It was
probably more exciting.
Exactly. Play. It was exactly. That was kind of like how it was with the 49ers. They were so bad.
Yeah, they were bad.
Right?
Yeah.
And anyway, Robin, your first 49er game.
Well, a little backstory. My late husband loved the 49ers so much that he got offered a job as an usher. And this was in 1977. Nobody's there. Ushering's a pretty easy job. So he got through 77. He got through 78. And in 78, he realized, or they told him, hey, all of you ushers, if you want to bring friends and family, bring them on. And I don't think they charged us or anything. You came with your employee, friend, relative. You got in for free and you sat right next to the guy or the girl who's ushering. And that happened in 78. I can't remember who they played. But it was, you know, it was fun just to be there at a game. And all through that season when 78, when they were so bad, well, I think it was 78, right?
Yes.
You know, I just went with him whenever he would go. And, you know, we would sit through the game, get excited maybe for a little bit. And then, so that was my first game. And then when they started to get good, the work got harder for Bob because there were more and more people. They could still get us in, but we had to buy a ticket. So when they went and played their playoff games for the Dallas game, that was like my first ever championship game for any sport. And I had a friend in Texas, and he was a big Dallas fan. And so he said, you know what? If they get to that game and you can get me a ticket, I'm going to come out. So I did that and I got a ticket and he came out and sat with me. And if I recall, the 49ers were losing that game and I couldn't stand the chatter from my friend. So I got up to go see Bob and in his section and see what he thought. And of course, he was so upset because this was going to be the year and they were not going to lose to Dallas. And I said, okay, well, let's hope for the best. And as I was walking back to my seat, I wasn't there yet. They were setting up for that, the catch. And by the time I got back, the play was done and they had scored. And it was amazing when I got back to my friend and said, you know what? The 49ers are doing this.
Yeah.
That's it. And, you know, everybody was screaming and hugging everybody. And so, you know, if there would be a first game that really has stayed with me all of these years, it's that one. And it's exactly that moment that's so special.
Right.
So.
Yes, for so many of us. I happened to be there as well. And I think, Scott, you were there too?
No, I missed it.
No, you were not there. Okay,
watching it, yeah, definitely.
You were watching it though, yeah.
And I'm still not sure if Montana was just trying to throw that out of bounds or not.
I know.
No. That's the big question.
Yeah.
Is it brilliance or was it desperation that turned out?
And I don't know if you guys heard this, but I heard it that before the game was over, Joe Montana was carrying the game ball and went into the Dallas end zone. They never said or did anything about it, but there's a lot of speculation out there like, wow, really? Could that have been scored on Dallas's side? So I don't know. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
It was just so exciting.
Well, I think, Robert, you described that so well. The it's hard, I think, for sports fans to, I guess maybe sports fans who've been through a long, long, long drought, maybe like the Knicks this year in the basketball, and then all of a sudden it starts to work, right? And you're going to go to a championship. It's the feeling is just quite remarkable. And I think the way that all happened, you know, we were such underdogs, and to be able to pull that off was huge. So it is one of those iconic moments. In fact, there was a time where they had a spot in the end zone at Candlestick that had a marker on it or something that was always there for every game as a kind of a place where Dwight Clark caught that ball. And now at Levi's, I don't know if you guys, I have my routine. I go down to the field. You know that, Scott. I go up to my seat. But, you know, when I was there this last preseason game with my daughter, son-in-law, and my grandson, we walked around a lot. So I saw a lot of the stadium that I hadn't seen before. And over on the opposite side of where I sit, I didn't even know this existed. Maybe you guys have seen it. Maybe it's been there a while, maybe not. But there is a statue of, on the platform there, a statue of Joe Montana throwing. It's a bigger than life statue. And then they measured the exact feet to where the catch was made, how far that pass was thrown. And then you've got a statue of Dwight Clark reaching up to catch the ball. So it's a complete, it's a scale, right? So when I stood there and I looked at how far Joe threw that, it's pretty remarkable when you actually can see that. So I don't know if this is new, but if next time you go, you guys, it's over on the opposite. You got to go check it out. It's pretty. I took some pictures of it. It's really amazing to see that captured in that way.
That's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Okay, so any other unique experiences that you've had with our 49ers?
Well, talking about favorite games or what? I mean, obviously, the game that we went to, Jeff, was pretty incredible, a championship game with the Lions. And yes. Of course, we had probably 6 to 8 linebacker-sized Detroit Lion fans with their jerseys on in front of us, and that was a really tough first half. To be honest with you, at halftime, we were looking at each other. I think we were down by 17 points or something and going, oh my God, what just happened? So,
yeah.
And a lot of cheering in front of us, which was a challenge. And then just to see the second half turnaround was absolutely amazing. It's probably one of the best Niner games I've been to by far. So it ranked right up there. And then, of course, the 50 yard, whatever catch by Ayuk, where it bounced off a Lion's helmet and he caught it.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and then of course we had Dan Campbell, Mr. Fourth, go on fourth down all the time, which helped us. So a lot of questioning about his decisions there, but that was an amazing game. It was really pretty cool. So,
yeah, that was one of those moments. The memory that I have, it's strange that I would have this memory, but the memory I had is just seeing those, was it 5 or 6 Lions fans at the end of the game with their heads down. And
your head
not
in the hand,
saying
yeah.
a word. I kind of felt bad. You know? I was like, you know, I've been there. I've seen this. But yeah, it's hard. I mean, you imagine if you're a Detroit Lions fan, you've never been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah,
no, and that was so close for them. So yeah, you did have. I did have a little twinge of feeling bad, but not much.
One other one that I really liked that I enjoyed was, I think it was 2013 when the Packers and the Niners were playing at Candlestick, and that was with Colin Kaepernick, and he ran all over the Packers and Gore. That was just fun because the Packers were a really good team, but I think Kaepernick had like 150, 180 yards or something, just running up and down. And then, of course, they went on to play the Falcons, I think, in the championship. Then there was the Harbaugh Bowl, but that was a really fun game, too, yeah. At Candlestick.
Yeah. How about you, Robin?
Yeah, there's so many memories, and I remember talking to you, Jeff, earlier this month or last month about how Candlestick is still so live and real in my memory. But Levi's, I think, is starting to catch up. We're starting to get, as fans, our own memories and our own way of living there, so to speak. But at Candlestick, I remember Jeff gave me his tickets to a New York Giants playoff game with the 49ers at home. And I went with Bob. He was not ushering then, and we went together. And the Giants lost. And like you said, Scott, I felt heartbroken for the guys sitting next to me. They were Giants fans. They had traveled from New York. They were so devastated. I think one of them was in tears because it was a playoff game, so it meant they were out. And I just felt so bad. And Jeff and I have a mutual friend, Anna, who was a huge Giants fan. Yes. And I was just thinking how she must be feeling with the Giants losing. But the crowd, it was so amazing. I still get chills now thinking about how the fans were after that first Super Bowl and how long we had waited and then everything that came after. Yes. You know, every game after that that we went to was just, you know, crazy with the fans and the love of the team. You know, our first Monday Night Football that I think maybe we had ever had, we went to that and it was wild and just, you know, so fun. And just every other game that had a meaning, someone retiring or someone, you know, coming back, like when Rice came back from that knee injury that he had, just the quietness that the stadium could get when one of the players would get hurt. It was just so amazing. And I don't know from all the other stadiums and teams, they have their things too, but this was like, I don't even know how to describe it. The fans and the team were like one so much of the time at Candlestick.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the common denominator there was the ownership. Yeah. I mean, Eddie D, was quite an owner. I mean, under his ownership, you know, 5 Super Bowls. And that was all while we were at Candlestick, right? That was sort of that time frame. And, you know, there's the thing about Candlestick, Robin, to your point of the feeling when you're there is the stadium was terrible.
Yes.
I mean, it was located probably in the worst place you could be because it was out on the edge of a little, I don't know, land mass next to the bay. And so it constantly was water rising and lowering. And there were games where there was flooding in the parking lot and you couldn't park. And, you know, please everyone take public transport. You know, and the winds that blew in Candlestick, you know, I mean, I remember being the first time I think I might have taken my son. I don't know, he was probably 4 or 5 years old. And we went to a preseason game and it was August. And, you know, they say it's colder in August than it is in January. Yes. And it's true. I remember taking a picture of fog just blowing over because we were up kind of high under the fog blowing over. And it was preseason. Everybody left. But, Scott, you know this. I usually stay to the bitter end. Doesn't matter what. And so we were sitting there and my son was wrapped up in a 49er blanket. And so I took a picture and I titled it 49er Faithful and I sent it in. I sent it into the 49ers to maybe they'd post it somewhere, but because it was a picture of, you know, somebody just, you know, enduring the. But no, Candlestick was not a great stadium at all. I mean, they had the AstroTurf for a while. They finally got grass in there. I mean, the parking and the traffic getting in and out was notorious. But you're right. It wasn't the stadium that was the issue. That was the what people remember. It's the lore, the different stories, the games, the players, and the things that you described earlier. So yeah, very special.
And it was a dual purpose stadium because they obviously played baseball there too. Yep. So sometimes they have the dirt infield out there.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
So you're like, oh my gosh, and it really made for interesting ball games, baseball games too. Watching the, you know, balls get hit out to the outfield and seeing the players scramble to try to catch it with the winds. It was just pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, Scott, you described a little bit earlier in your intro the earthquake game, I'll call it. And, you know, you talk about, you know, the catch being something everybody remembers. Well, when you talk about baseball, everybody remembers that moment. But why don't you describe it a bit more? Because you were actually there. You were kind of saying it a bit, but yeah, give us some more color.
Well, it was right before, what was it, 5:07 or something. So we were walking in and just getting ready to, you know, go to our seats. And as we're walking in the parking lot, we hear all these car alarms going off. And it's like, what the heck? And then you kind of look down the parking lot and you see this wave of cars going up and down, coming towards you. And I'll never forget that as long as I live. It was quite a sight, just seeing that coming towards you and trying to understand what's going on. And then, you know, you think, oh, crap, there's an earthquake. And then, of course, some of us were like, woohoo, okay, this is our chance, getting all pumped up. And then we went to our seats. And I was one of the few people that had the black and white Sony Walkman, which is the TV. You pull up the antenna and you look at it, and then you start to see some of the devastation in the marina and in the Bay Bridge, and all the players were out on the field with their wives and their family. Everyone's kind of wondering, is this going to happen? Of course, you didn't want to leave in case it did, because you really didn't know about the devastation at the time. But it was incredible. And of course, you know, after that, the A's, you know, got all their pitching rested for 10 days off and came back and swept the Giants. So that was a challenge. But it was something I'll never forget, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that is just the sheer timing of the two teams from the Bay Area playing in the Bay Area, and you have an earthquake. I mean, it just how does that happen? But
I actually enjoyed tailgating too, both Niner games and for Giants games. It, you know, the parking lot, unless you went out to the dirt areas, and of course, like you mentioned, Jeff, they got flooded. Yeah. But if you made it into the parking lot there, a lot of times we go early and watch the early games sometimes, you know, with the TV in the back, you know, the 10 a.m. games, and then head in for the games. They had a really good tailgating atmosphere. I don't know if it's quite the same at Levi's, but it was really good at Candlestick.
Yeah, it's starting to get that way, Scott. That's what I'm saying. You can feel it. When you first started to go to Levi's, it was just a parking lot full of cars, maybe a few tailgaters. But now they're really starting to resemble how that parking lot looked at Candlestick. It'll never be the same, but it sure is a different group of fans, right? The whole dynamic is different now. But I love to see that, because it's just excitement that they're there for the 49ers. Everyone is wearing their 49er gear. And I was, really amazed at, you know, how much it is starting to turn into, like I said before, like our new home is starting to feel like the old home.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's going to get more interesting, because I noticed at training camp across the street from the stadium, it used to be a golf course, and it's the edge of the convention center. They've ripped all that out, and they're going to build multi-layered apartments, shops, restaurants, the whole bit, all the way for quite a ways, for I would say a good half a mile radius around. And so when that gets built, and they've got a whole sign up there, that will then, I think, create even more of a reason to go down there to hang out before the game or after the game and so on, which I just don't think, that's one of the things that's been difficult. And I think people realize that during the Super Bowl. And I heard comments that they had to drive, back to San Francisco and then back down the traffic and one, you know, and that's kind of awkward. So if they create more of a community, more of a business place, it'll keep people down there. So,
Jeff, I don't know if you're at them. Just one other Candlestick memory is, when they played the Lions, and it was when they had the Oakland Hills fire, and that was definitely something different. Stadium was probably a third full or half full, and just the ash pouring down, it was pretty devastating. And I had a white car, and I came out to my car, you know, with so many people coming out to my car in the parking lot, it was just covered in ash. It was pretty devastating. I remember them playing the Lions, and then stadium, you know, was not even half full.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's true. That was also another memorable. Yeah. So before we kind of leave off the past and talk a little bit about today, just wanted to just ask each of you, you know, who is, if you were thinking back, you know, who's been your favorite player that you've kind of followed? And if you could wear their jersey, which one would it be? Or maybe you already have it, Scott.
Well, all time, obviously, I think one of my favorites was Jerry Rice. But going into games today, I really enjoy Brock Purdy. I think he's come a long way. Of course, I got his jersey too. I told you the other day about what I did. I had a Deebo Samuel jersey, and about 6 months ago, I'm like, this will never happen again. And I gave it to Goodwill, and sure enough, here he is back. Number 19. My son's teasing me about that one. So I never thought Deebo would be back and obviously wear 19, because I think he was number one when he left. So, but yeah, of course, Jerry Rice, I think, is all time great. He's a GOAT. But today, I really, I saw Brock Purdy when he came in. I think it was Jimmy got hurt, and saw him come in and flourish ever since. So yeah, it's kind of neat to see.
Yeah. How about you, Robin?
So I think all time Jerry Rice, that's the only jersey that I ever had. I worried about him every game after he got hurt because, you know, I would tell Bob, oh, look, he's fixing his socks. I think he hurt his knee again. He would say, you're crazy. But, you know, I thought he was great and I never wanted to see him get hurt. I have a story about my favorite now. Bob and I always used to go to Stanford football. I still have season tickets even today to support the team. But, you know, when we went to see games, Christian McCaffrey was there. He won everything. We won the Rose Bowl that year. So this year, just a couple of months ago, I bought myself a Christian McCaffrey jersey. So I would say, because of the history it feels like we have together, I have to wear that jersey. But I have to say, we also watched Andrew Luck. And Andrew Luck went to the Colts. So there's a connection with that. And now Andrew Luck is back with Stanford. He's a director of football operations. So, and he brought his head coach that had coached him when he was at the Colts. He brought him over to be the head coach of the Stanford Cardinal. So pretty awesome, that little connection there. And it also keeps me, keeps Bob kind of alive in my heart because he was such a big Stanford fan and such a big 49er fan. He would be thrilled that Luck was back and he'd be thrilled that Christian was playing for the 49ers. Yes. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Definitely. And do you have an Andrew Luck Colts jersey?
I do.
Yes. Okay.
They were on sale in Indianapolis after he said, I've had enough.
Yeah.
And I told Gary, let's buy a Colts shirt. And so the quarterback from that led them to the Super Bowl. Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning, yes.
So he bought a Peyton Manning shirt and I bought an Andrew Luck shirt.
Okay.
And mine was 50% off.
Yeah.
But another thing, just the other day, we went out to a consignment store and I told Gary, let's just go in and see what they have. It's called Plato's Closet. I think they have them even in California. So we went in there and we're going through the men's section and they had a Richardson jersey. So Richardson was the first round draft pick that they got a couple of years ago, and then he's been hurt. Well, he's back again, and he's not starting, but he's going to be a backup. So for $12, Gary got a Richardson jersey.
There you go.
So kind of bringing back the old times. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's great.
Probably won't be as good as Samuel, though.
Yeah. I went defensive, and my favorite defensive player was Ronnie Lott. So I have a Ronnie Lott jersey, and I do see a lot of those when I go to the game. So a lot of people have that, and he was just an amazing defensive player and made a huge difference for the team. Okay, let's look forward a little bit today and beyond. So just really curious, how are you guys feeling about this 2026 season for the 49ers? Positive?
Well,
optimistic?
I agree with Scott on the Purdy. This could be his year. I mean, from everything I've heard, he's throwing well, he's running well, everything he's doing is top notch. And I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, he's going to surprise everybody. And not that he hasn't already, but he was young and now he's coming into his own. Kind of feels like, I don't want to jinx him, but it does kind of feel like Joe Montana, if you think back on those early years with Joe. And for a wedding gift, I got a signed Purdy jersey from a friend of mine.
Wow.
Nice. His friend knows the family. And so he signed it. So I got to get that out and I won't wear it because it's too nice, but, you know, maybe hang it up or something for the season. But I don't know. I feel really good about that. And Christian McCaffrey is healthy. And I hope that, I don't know what you guys think, but Kittle, if he's going to do the miraculous return from that Achilles tendon injury. So I feel very optimistic that they're going to go far this year.
Right. Great. How about you, Scott?
I'm guarded only because of the fact the last 2 years we've been injury plagued. And you and I went to training camp, Jeff, and we saw a lot of players that really weren't playing or even practicing. They were kind of resting. We've got a good mix of youth and veterans now, so I think that's really good. I think we did some really good draft picks. I really like Stribling. He looks really good. And Black, he looks really good. So I'm excited about the draft picks and the mixture of young and older. But gosh, you know, Purdy hurt 2 years ago, and then we saw what happened with Warner and Bosa and all that last year, and Kittle. So hopefully they all come back strong and we don't get that injury bug. But if we don't, I think we'll go really far, to be honest with you. I really do. I know there's a big stretch there in December where we got some really tough games that I'm a little worried about. So we'll know where we're at by then, though, anyway. So I'm very optimistic, just guarded just because of the injury play.
Yeah.
You know, we got Mike Evans. I don't think I've seen him play much at all.
Yeah.
I don't even, though. But hopefully he'll, you know, his maturity will help the younger guys, the younger receivers, too. So.
Yeah, my sense throughout this training camp is that they are being extremely careful. And I saw a list that they had the most players on who are injured. Well, there's injury that ends your season, and then there's nagging things. And I really think that most of what we've seen is just super cautious, trying to make sure everybody is ready to go on September 10th in Australia. This first game. And so I'm with you guys. I feel like if barring the injuries, so if we set those aside, there will be injuries. I mean, that's just what happens, but hopefully nothing significant. But barring that, I don't know what else they could do to be better. I mean, every position is just, I mean, the defense is a little suspect. The line sometimes are, but Kyle's so much of a genius in terms of how he runs plays. He'll minimize those weaknesses and, you know, really leverage the strengths. So we'll see what happens. I'm ready to go to SoFi. Valentine wow. Dream.
I'm saving my money for that, Jeff.
What's that?
I'm saving my money for it.
Yes, yes. Well, I am going to go to Mexico City. And because they are playing the Vikings there in late November, and that will be my first time to see an international game, so that will be quite exciting to do that.
Yep.
So
I'm hoping you stick up with my son. He's going too, so that'll be cool.
Yeah, I hope we do. We do kind of find a way to get our seats. And Robin, I think you're still contemplating.
Yep, we sure are. Yep.
Okay.
We hope we'll be there with you.
Yeah, I've contacted my ticket agent. I still don't have any sense of when those tickets are going to be released. They told me that they will release them to the team, and the team will then decide who's all going to get it, and then there'll be some left over. Not many, but there'll be some. So I made my pitch. I've been a season ticket holder. I'm on your books for 60 years.
Wow.
It would seem like
wow.
I ought to be in that running. Well, we'll see what happens. And I think I can get more than, because I have 8 seats, so hopefully I can get more. So if I do, we'll have tickets to go around. So we'll see how that plays out. Okay. Let's see. What is, let's, should we go to predictions? You guys ready for that? So I got a couple of predictions. Number one prediction is, what's the record of the 49ers? What do they end up? 10 wins, 6 wins, 16 wins?
I'm just thinking of last season. All the games that they lost that should have been wins. I don't see an imperfect season. I mean, I don't see a perfect season coming for them. But, you know, 10 or 12 games would probably get them where they want to be by January.
Okay.
Yeah, they're in a tough division, that's for sure. I mean, come on, you got the Seahawks, who just won the Super Bowl, and then, of course, the Rams. Everyone's picking them, I think. I'm hoping 10-7. You know, maybe 11-6, but I think that might be a stretch. They got some really tough games. It seems like their schedule's pretty tough this year, though. So, and hopefully 10-7 will get them in the playoffs easily, I would think. So.
Now, the Seahawks were just sold. NFL just approved that sale. So it's interesting to watch how that will affect the team, if at all.
Yeah. I think the schedule is not like last year. Last year, we were able to win 13 games with skeleton crew, Brock and the skeletons, right? But it was an easy schedule.
It was easy.
It really was. It was one of the most easy. This year, it's a tough schedule. So I'm with you guys. I think we need to be realistic that there's going to be some struggle here. And the most important thing is to get to the playoffs, and then all bets are off, right? And then I think that's the goal here. So, and stay healthy. I love the fact that Kittle wants to play in that first game. He is ready to go. But I'm like, George, I need you in January, not in September 10th, right? So I hope there'll be some reasoning on this, because it really, at the end of the day, it's who's healthiest and who's capable of peaking in that January timeframe. Those are the teams that are going to go.
And later in the season, that's a stretch in December where they play, I think, the Rams, the Chargers, then Kansas City, who's, I don't think we've beaten in six games now, and then Philly right after that. So that's going to be a tough stretch for sure.
Yep.
With Kittle, I'm with you, Jeff, with Kittle. Kevin Durant, you remember in that last, one of the last playoff games they had, he came back super fast from an Achilles tendon. And I mean, they needed him right in the playoffs. So it made sense that they were pushing it, but he got hurt right away. And I'm with you. Don't play George until give him a few more games, middle of the season. That's fine. But come back strong.
Yeah.
And, that's where it's going to mean the most.
Yeah. Especially going to Australia, the long flight, all that. I mean, I know it's the Rams, but, so anyway, I would probably say the same with Bosa. I would just say it's better, but we'll see what they do. Kyle is pretty conservative. So, he may have plans we don't know about, but okay. Last question. Who's going to raise the Lombardi in SoFi? Robin?
Niners. What else can I say? Gotta be Niners.
Yes, spoken like a true 49er faithful. And they're going to beat who?
Boy, I don't think I have a guess. Wouldn't it be great if Kansas City was there and we beat them?
No.
No. I'm with you, Jeff.
No. I thought Robin, you were going to say the Colts.
Yeah.
Probably. I was, but then I thought about the Colts. They're not going to get that far. Okay, Raiders.
Okay, right. There you go. That'll be, How about you, Scott? Who's going to raise?
Well, actually, mentioned the Raider game. I am so grateful after watching that last night, be honest with you, because I missed most of the preseason because I was in Alaska on a cruise for retirement. But Eddie Pinheiro, I love that guy. Oh my God, my stress level is so down now that we have him instead of Jake Moody. Every time my heart would be pounding when he's kicking an extra point or something. So it's so nice that we've got Eddie. I mean, when he kicked 6 field goals last night, he scored all the points.
Yeah.
So that's a big plus. As far as the Super Bowl, of course, I want the Niners, but I'm also a realist. I think it probably would be someone from the NFC West, Rams or Seahawks or Niners. So, and I'd really like to see the Bills, to be honest with you. I would love to see them. I've always been a big fan of the Bills. They've never quite been able to lift the trophy. And I love Josh Allen.
An NFL season is a marathon. I mean, it really is, to get through it healthy and to get to enough games to get to the playoffs, and then to be able to get enough luck and things go your way in the playoffs to actually get to that game, and then to get to the game. And as we saw in Las Vegas, to get to that game and then actually to win it is tough. So, but that's why we watch it.
Yep.
So, okay. Well, this has been just an amazing conversation. Both of you have such a passion for football, and particularly the Niners. It's wonderful to have this conversation. Any last thought, question, or story before we sign off?
I'm just excited about the season. I'm really thrilled about that we've got, Warner back, Bosa back, and Kittle back, and now we got Kinlaw back. I mean, Greenlaw, right? Yeah, Greenlaw, sorry. That will be interesting to see how that works out. So, And then I think we really got some good running backs with McCaffrey and now Black, you know, and James. He looked pretty good last night. So hopefully they stay healthy and can, you know, don't make Christian such a workhorse. I think we may, you know, go pretty far.
Great. Robin,
well,
last thought.
Just want to thank you, Jeff. And I'm so happy that we reconnected over the last couple of years since retirement. And we could be chatting again about the 49ers. I have really missed that when you got busy with work and I got busy and retired. We're back to what we love. And, you know, we've always talked 49ers, and that's like a highlight for me the last 30 years. So thank you for doing this, and thank you for including me.
Thanks, Jeff.
It's been fun. As Robin said, we could go on for hours with so many shared stories. Hopefully we will watch a game together this season at Levi's. To conclude, I will remind you that this season promises us amazing games, record-breaking stats, some wins and losses, and many unexpected outcomes. But when we get to February 14th, Valentine's Day, one team will achieve a Valentine dream and will lift the Lombardi Trophy, along with a lot of relief, joy, and exhaustion, and among all, the cheers and the team-colored confetti. Who will it be? Thank you again for listening to this special edition of Written Reflections. Talk to you real soon.